Defense Commission. I'm going to skip some of the beginning stuff so we go right into the issues that are raised, because David Carroll is on the... Are you on the phone, David?
I am.
Good. And you said you could only stay 45 minutes, so we're going to go straight to some stuff that we need some of your advice as a consultant on. Franny, could we go first?
Okay.
Franny, you're there? Is Franny there? No, not yet. We'll come back. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll come back to the roll, public comment, and the other stuff. I'd like to go directly, because David's only got 45 minutes with us, and I want him to hear what's going on with the municipal courts. Franny, would you go on number four to Las Vegas Municipal Court of Raymond Concerns and give us a report?
Is Dana on the phone?
David's on the phone.
I'm here.
Dana, are you on the phone?
Dana.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's there.
Let me just introduce what we did, and then Dana can explain the question we're talking about during that. When Dana went to, after our last meeting, he went to the judge and the city attorney, and I got to call him. Agreed to serve on the avenue.
Franny, you're breaking up. We can't hear you in Carson. You're breaking up.
Okay. Where's the
one?
This one. Okay. I'm going to close the bank. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So, Brad Jervik, the city attorney, called me, and we gathered up a meeting of Amy Rose and I, the city attorney, the municipal court administrator, two contract lawyers, and a prosecutor from the city attorney's office. And I think with the great help of Jervik, actually, who, when he realized what was going on, which is where I brought Lynn Simmons and myself on police and people, they was able to come up with a proposal for resolving the issues. For those that were at this meeting, the primary issue raised was that clients are in municipal court on a monitor. The lawyer is there, the judge is there, the prosecutor is there, and the plea offer is given to the client. The client is not there, the client is in the setting. And the discussion of the plea offer is all being done in open court in front of everyone. There are some logistical problems because of the sort of limitations at the detention center, but it looks like with some technology help that the cases move quickly and many people go and we want to get people out of detention. So Dan, can you pick it up from there in terms of what the proposal is from the city?
Yes, thank you, Franny. I met with our city IT department as well as the jail, and we believe we have, I hate to call it a Dick Tracy phone, but it's essentially a voice over internet protocol phone that's able to transmit both voice and video. And we can install those phones in the backside of the court and security areas for public attorneys to use fairly easily. At the jail, it's going to take a little more work, but it's not insurmountable. When we can put some of those phones in the area which will provide some level of confidentiality, we can try to make it as confidential as possible, but we also have to meet jury concerns at the jail. This will enable those public attorneys to call in ahead of their video appearances and actually speak with those clients and convey the offers and any advice they can provide at that early stage prior to the actual video appearance.
Dana, when do you think that this might be able to be implemented?
I'd like to say we could do it by the end of October, but to be conservative, I'd say by the end of November, when you consider all the procurement hoops we'll have to jump through and possibly some light construction at the jail to make some areas that are somewhat confidential.
So that's the report, Justice.
Franny, do you feel that this matter, and Dana, do you feel this matter has been resolved now, that this is going to be satisfactory as long as we check to make sure that this is accomplished? Are we okay with the municipal court in Las Vegas now?
I think so. You know, I've been reluctant to say that anything but contact is okay, but I have to tell you that the volume in municipal court, and then we need to be able to get people out of jail so that they're able to get away. I think that the city attorney, Dana, and the two contract lawyers are committed to making this work in a way that will provide the confidential advice that the clients need and are entitled to. I know we fiddled around with lots of different contexts, and having the lawyer in the detention facility and not in the courtroom and that kind of thing. This is better. I think this will work out better. The bail part, the lawyer separated, have the prosecutor in the courtroom with the judge, and the lawyer in the detention center isn't so good either. So with the practical things that they're dealing with, once it's implemented and we see how it's actually carried out, I think it's probably the best we can do.
And Justice Turek, I can tell you that on behalf of the municipal court judges, myself, and the city attorney, we want to be very careful to make sure that we balance both the defendant's rights to meaningful defense representation with the ability to get that defendant released as quickly as possible and not keep them incarcerated and any longer than possible.
Well, I think that we... Go ahead.
Excuse me, Justice Turek, am I right, Dana, bringing this matter to the attention of the municipal court judges, that even though we don't have the Dick Tracy phones yet, as we're calling them, even though we don't have them, that they will not be doing those confidential sessions anymore in any of the courtrooms, is that right?
That's correct. They had a meeting last week where that was a definite subject of discussion for about an hour.
Well, I think we have a temporary resolution. David Carroll, you comfortable with this type of resolution that this commission has reached?
From what I've heard, yes. Sounds like it's a good approach.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks to the committee, Franny, Dana, the attorneys, and the city officials. I was an alternate municipal judge for 20 years and down at municipal court, and it was always a very pleasant experience throughout those 20 years. Let's go to another.
Thank you, Justice Terry.
Another contested issue is Clark County arraignment process. Drew Christensen, Franny, and Chris Lally and Amy Rose. Could we have a report on that as to what we're doing with that?
I think, Justice Terry, I can give you an oral report.
Great.
We haven't moved much further. I'm going to make a request of you. Amy Rose and I both observed arraignment court. Drew is familiar with arraignment court. Chris, I think that you probably know to observe arraignment court. Is that right? A time or two. So, there are definite problems. I think, Chris will explain the biggest problem is that because the time is only the way up from the justice court to the Supreme Court has been shortened to 2 days. There's no, the plea agreement is not going to come home until the morning of the arraignment. And it means a couple of things. One is that the, Phil was the one who raised this issue. Is that one thing it means is that there is no, confidential setting, just what we're talking about with municipal court, there's no confidential setting to talk with the client about the plea agreement, because they didn't get the plea agreement until that morning. And unless they're out of custody, where you can talk to them out in the hallway, they're in a big sort of bullpen behind glass, and the lawyer's talking in an unconfidential setting about the plea agreement. The other problem, as I understand it, Phil's going to be able to explain this a little more, the other problem is the impact on vertical representation, because everybody's down there doing arraignment court all at once, that it was obvious to me that there were a group of clients who were meeting a lawyer for the first time. I couldn't have been aware that they went over orally in the jail, for instance, before the written plea agreement was ready. They were talking to a lawyer for the first time about a plea agreement for the first time in an unconfidential setting. I think there may be some, I don't know how much resistance there would be to changing the back, necessarily the way you remember it, when you were in the court session, in the basement court. But I think someone else other than me should lead this group. I have a lot of practical issues that I just don't know enough about to be able to actually answer the questions or the hurdles that, that are likely to be discussed when you're talking about, well, won't you just transfer the problem back to the district court because they still won't be able to have the plea agreement ready. So I don't know the answers to those questions, so I would like to ask that you, somebody else appointed as leader of this group, that does, that's in the trenches, that does the work. And maybe somebody else is.
Do we have any suggestions from the Clark County folks?
Well, this is Philip Cohn. And I raised this originally, and when we went from 8 days, which is way too long, to 2 days, I voiced my concern because the DA was at the table and they said it's going to take us a day, or day and a half to get the plea agreement. And I understand that that's just the, you know, what time is required. And my concern on this was it wasn't really thought out how just 2 days would affect this. And now there's a couple things. Randy notes, observes, and we never talked about this, Randy observed that there's an issue with early representation. Well, the fact is, if you do prelims on a Monday, you're probably in a judge, you're going to be in some district court that's going to have district court only on Monday and Wednesday. And so the problem is, when do you see your client? And if you miss going to district court on Monday because you were in prelims, and especially if you're out in North Las Vegas or Henderson, then you have to go on Wednesday to district court, and there's no time to get down to the arraignment court. And so it's very hard to maintain federal representation for 2 days on many, many levels. And certainly, it's not the DA's fault. It just came up to get the plea agreement from Freeland to us in time to give us a chance to go to the jail. So I don't want you people to be invested longer. My other concern that I voiced was that more and more of the hearing absolutely from deputies in our office that a deal was struck at preliminary hearing. It was cemented in the lower level with a plea agreement, but since the district court judge never was part of that, all of a sudden they get to sentencing and the district court judge recognizes, I would never take this plea, and then the devil is sentenced to something in a way that was never contemplated by the plea agreement. When, Justice Cherry, when you were at district court and you took the plea, if it was something you thought, I'm not following this, you'd tell them, you would have voiced an objection to it, right before you did it. So those kind of concerns were around it if we keep lower level. The judge that is doing lower level is off to a new career in January, and this is a good time to relook at this. It hurts our representation, and it hurts, please, Evan, in the long run.
Has anybody talked to the presiding criminal judge? I think it's, is it Doug? Is Doug Herndon still the presiding criminal judge in the 8th Judicial?
Judge Villani.
Has anybody talked to Villani about this issue?
No, Judge Bell has brought the issue up. And I know that she is, she's not totally crazy about it, at least in discussions that she's had with me, and she talked about doing something else, perhaps a discovery commissioner. But as far as the police officer is concerned, this really isn't easy for us one way or the other. It's, we're fine with it this way, we'd be fine with it another way. In terms of the 40-hour bindovers, it's a win for the county because it cuts down significantly. I think it's a win for the defendant. I think it's a win for the system. It cuts down significantly on time in the jail. So if the defendant gets an OR after plea, that's moved up significantly. So there's just a lot of benefit to the expedited process. I know that's not really the issue here. It's a lot bigger than that. But in terms of arraignment for you know, we're really sort of two scoops of vanilla on a plain stone with respect to this issue.
And I don't want to see us get away from the 48 hours, but I just want to go back to the district court where it's going to end up. So our lawyers will be there, not to be somewhere else, and the court that's going to take the plea is going to hear the plea, know whether that's something that they're willing to follow, and not let us get to sentencing, and all of a sudden, we're stuck with the judge who said, oh, I wouldn't take that deal. So I don't necessarily want to change the time frame. I just want us in the district courts because our lawyers have to be in justice court, district court, and lower level all at the same time. And that's where we initiate the representation.
Well, Justice Jerry, maybe the thing for this commission to do would be if you could appoint somebody else to take the lead on this, the Bellani and Bell on the criminal and talk about it because the timing is right right now to do something because you wouldn't have to do the job.
You read my mind. Drew, I need you to take the lead on this with Chris Lally and with Franny. You can still participate, there's no doubt, to see what's going on. And if you can meet with Villani and Linda Bell, our next meeting is October 30th, which gives you some time to try to work. That's over a month to try to work something out. And maybe we can just live with this until Melissa De La Garza becomes... That's who the one is. That's the new JP, right?
Correct.
Yeah, she's the new JP. Maybe the system, the thing could just die. In other words, who knows if they need to really fill that position again and go back to the district court. That's a possibility. This is really not an issue that I can resolve as a Supreme Court Justice or this commission, but certainly the committee could work with the presiding justice judge and the chief judge, and both of them have experience as prosecutor. Villani was a prosecutor and a defense attorney. Linda was a defense attorney. There's no reason why this can't be resolved satisfactorily. So, Drew, would you take the lead on this, and let's report this back on October 30th to the. Okay. All right. Thank you. The next issue that I wanted David Carroll to hear was the Henderson Municipal Court issue. We've got some issues with the Henderson Municipal Court. John or Franny, do you want to give a report on that? Franny?
I took a look at, I think there's a bigger issue here too, Justice Jerry, and that is what are we doing with regard to plans and what do we want to do with regard to court plans. It was good enough to pull together a plan and to present it to the commission. I took a look at the model plan and Henderson's plan, and the model plan, just to remind people, was a long time ago, is that we adopted the provisions of the model. The confusion sometimes comes in because people think that it's like the Clark, the 8th Judicial District plan is a model plan. It is the 8th Judicial District's an adaptation of the model plan. The model plan was meant to give guidance to the courts on the kinds of things that they should have in place. It's a little bit fashioned after the federal system where both local courts come up with their plan for provision of innocent defense. I wrote a memo, sorry it's a little late, but I wrote a memo that you have in your materials comparing the two. And there's not a lot of intersection between the Henderson plan and the model plan. There's a lot of stuff that the city requires in there with regard to contracting language, but not a lot with regard to some of the main things, particularly independence, who they create a selection committee, for instance, but they don't say who's on it. So they could have a prosecutor on it, they could have a judge on it, there just is no definition in the plan. To be able to ensure that there was some independence of the contract lawyers. There's no limitation on how much they can delegate. So in other words, the selection committee could select an attorney based upon qualifications and then delegate the work to somebody else. There's no real guidance on eligibility as there is in the model forward. Anyway, it's all in the memo. I guess the question is that I don't think we have ever actually come up with a process for looking at people's plans on a regular basis and looking at court plans on a regular basis and then I don't know if they should be, if the plans themselves should then go to the Supreme Court, you know, and if we find problems with the plan, I don't think we really have talked that out. I actually think that at least until there's a right to counsel commission, for instance, a real one, that this commission should have a good role in reviewing these plans, and because we know the concepts that should be in there. And I think it would be good for the system if we had some regularity of review of the plans, and then what do we do after that? You know, let's say this is a report that says, we really need to tweak this plan because it doesn't have a lot of the things that the model plan has in it. Would it be the intent to go back to Henderson and send it back and say, you know, you really need to look at your plan and build in the independence and do the kinds of things that are the elements of the model plan?
Justin Cherry?
Yes.
This is Bill Zillman. I'm court administrator out of Henderson Municipal Court. So that's my plan you're talking about. I want to echo Franny's comment. First, I want to, we submitted the revised document because as I've been participating in this committee and commission, that we noticed that when we originally submitted the plan, this was back in 2008, 2009, and it's never been revised or reviewed since then. And so I felt, based on the conversations you were having in this committee, that it would be in our interest to revise our plan and resubmit that to the Supreme Court. So the plan that you got basically was based off of Las Vegas Municipal Court's plan that was submitted back in 2009, with some minor changes based on how the last process we did went through the system. And a lot of this, I wasn't able to provide some of the information that Franny referenced, was our former city attorney kind of directed the path when the new contract was put out there. He had contacted Las Vegas Municipal Court, liked the way that they did things, and kind of based the process off of that. So there's probably some that information we can get and follow up. But to echo Franny's comments, one of the things that I noted and wanted to bring up today was, I appreciate Franny's email. It was very helpful since I was copied on that. And I've got a copy of the model plan. The last one I had was dated May 22nd, 2008. So if there's been no update to that, then we'll use that when we go back and review the plan we just submitted and revise it again for you.
Well, thank
but
you.
To follow up and echo Frank's plans, you know, we had used the Supreme Court's website to try to find what else had been submitted, and it was kind of difficult to find these, to be quite honest. It's not very user-friendly, but from what I saw, from what's posted, there are 5 municipal courts in the state that have posted and had documents filed dating back to 08 and 09, and none updated since ours during this session. So Reno's there, Sparks is there, North Las Vegas, and Henderson. No other mini courts are posted on the Supreme Court's webpage. The only other ones I saw posted was Clark County's administrative plan and Second Judicial District. Nobody else. None of the other ones are posted. And I guess to echo Franny's comments is, I would love to have the help of somebody to go through our plan and have somebody, some oversight, and give some direction. I think that'd be beneficial to all the courts. It's just not there. It seems like we had to submit them back on the original order back in 2008, and they were done and kind of forgotten about.
John McCormick?
So,
just to follow up on what Bill said, reaching back into my feeble memory, we didn't require the rural district courts to submit a plan because they operated off the John Lambros, Judge Wagner, Lake Tahoe compromise at that point. So those courts and the urban municipal courts were the only courts that were required to submit plans, and they submitted them. They're in the ADKT 411 file, but they haven't been reviewed, I think, in any meaningful way by this group. So maybe that's...
Well, let's, Henderson, Bill, let's have you meet with your folks and try to send us a revised plan before the October 30th meeting so that we can at least clear Henderson to say that at least it's acceptable, as we said, even though they're never the best plans, but they at least are acceptable to the commission. How's that?
We'll do what we can, sir.
Okay.
Absolutely.
The next meeting is October 30th, so I need you to join us again to give a report. So we'll have the municipal court. We're going to have a report from the arraignment, downstairs arraignment, and then the Henderson Municipal Court. That takes care of the three major issues that we have today. So let's go back to the beginning of the... Yes?
I think to be clear for Bill, and it wasn't the intent of the municipal work plans had to be exact match with the model plan, you know, but at least the major element should be there. The second thing to make sure as he's going over and taking a look at it is to make sure that the permits that they're issuing are not flat fee contracts.
Absolutely.
Dana with the Las Vegas Municipal Court has built in language into the Las Vegas Municipal Court plan that wants to provide.
Bill, I'm sure Dana will give you a hand on this, and if you need something from John McCormick, give him a call. He's got this under his control here in Carson, and has available any of the documents that have been filed. So we'll see you on October 30th. Next, John.
All right, sounds good, sir.
Yeah, let's go back to the beginning. I'm going to call the meeting to order as I didn't do originally. Could you call the roll?
Jess Cherry.
Here.
Judge Armstrong. John Arascotta.
Present.
Bob Bell.
Present.
David Carroll's on the phone. Drew Christensen.
Here.
Joni Easley.
Yes, on the phone.
Judge Fairman.
Here, my phone.
Franny Forsman.
Here.
Judge Herndon.
Hello.
D.A. Hicks?
Yes.
Judge Higgins? Kristen Hill? Dana was on the phone. I thought he might have signed off. Judge Kaysen?
On the phone.
Phil Cohn?
Here.
Michael Kagan?
Here.
Karen Kreisenbeck?
Present.
Chris Lawley?
Present.
John Lambros?
Present.
Judge Montero?
No, I'm here.
Mark Picker? Rochelle Resnick?
Here.
Amy Rose? Diane Roth? Sean Rowe? Judge Schlegelmilch? Judge Shirley? Judge Simons?
Present, my phone.
John Slaughter? Dagny Stapleton?
Here.
Jonelle Thomas?
Here.
Judge Walker?
Present, my phone.
Jeff Wells?
Here.
Judge Young? We're good.
Okay, could I...
This is Kristen Hill. I think my phone was on mute when you called me.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Who was that?
Kristen Hill.
Okay. Thank you, Kristen. On the public comment, do we have any public comment in any of the areas? Clark?
No.
Nothing here in Carson, Reno, Ely, Elko, St. Louis, Washington, D.C.? All right, no public comment. We have another thing for public comment. I need a motion to review to approve the August 30th, 2018 meeting summary.
So moved.
And who was that?
Jeff Wells.
Jeff, thank you. Is there a second? All those in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. It's approved. We now go to John McCormick, payment for public defense services follow-up.
At the last IDC meeting, we discussed. Some of the payment issues that David Carroll observed and kind of had a discussion on how to move forward with that. So in your packet, beginning on page 14, you'll see the standard for the termination of indigence from the ADKT 411 order in... Okay, then. The ADKT 411 order from January 4th of 2008, if I recall. And that standard is that a person is indigent if they are unable without substantial hardship to him or his dependents to obtain counsel. And that's presumptively determined to include people who receive temporary public assistance, SNAP, TANF, Medicaid, SSI, Section 8 housing, or earn less than 200% of the federal poverty guidelines. So we have the standard to determine indigence that's already been there. And then you'll see on page 16 of the packet, the 2018 poverty guidelines for the 48 contiguous states. So a person presumptively is eligible for representation by a public defender if they make less than $24,280 a year, which would be twice the federal poverty for one individual. And then David Carroll provided us with some information from the Federal District Court Judge Bench Book that kind of walks the judge through determining indigence, so kind of starts to come up with that colloquy that his report called for. And then you'll see also attached on page 23 the federal financial affidavit, and then on page 24 the financial affidavit from Washington State after some reforms they did there. So my thought on this would be to, if the commission is so inclined, to develop a suggested colloquy or canvas or whatever you want to call it, and then come up with a Nevada specific financial affidavit definition and distribute that with the standard for indigence, as well as some information on the statute that allows charging for public defenders, that it has to be done after the fact and based upon the defendant's ability to pay, and potentially distributing that to the courts and or asking the Supreme Court to approve requiring that, and then providing those documents as models.
Any comment to John McCormick on this issue of the Defense Services follow-up? Okay, John.
All right.
Go ahead.
Cool.
Hans, on the caseload standards discussion, anything new on that?
Nothing real new. We finalized the 2018 fiscal year statistics. I don't have totals provided in the statistics chart on the very last page of your materials. One of the things that we noticed as we were looking at these statistics is the consistency between filings and dispositions. A lot of times when we look at filings and dispositions across the trial court caseload, we see a lot fewer perhaps dispositions compared to filings in certain case types. Here in these statistics, you can see it's very consistent. So the same number of cases that are going in as felonies is the same number or percentage of dispositions that are coming in. And we don't see that same type of thing when we're asking for the trial court statistics. So there's some swings in how many felonies and things like that. Those usually make up a lot fewer of the disposition type scripts when you look at them. We just thought that this showed a lot of consistency in the way that the courts, and more specifically the public defenders, because this is heavily Clark County influenced, and how the statistics are being reported to us. So.
Is there any conclusions we can reach as far as caseload standards?
As far as, well, it comes back to really what ultimately we want to do with this commission, and that comes down to whether we create a new dictionary, whether we go through a process that requires certain standards. I will point out that if you look at other states, there is not a standard for how many attorneys, attorneys that we have in the state of Nevada, where we have that. In Texas, Colorado, there's even a national standard. So it would need to go much higher level than what I can provide. But I can continue to gather the statistics in the report and show you kind of where we're standing at this stage.
David Carroll, are you still on the phone? No.
No.
I'm wondering what the next step on standards would be, Justice
Chair. Well, one of the issues we're going to reach also, and all the, especially in Clark County, with the request for new judges, how that's going to affect everything we're doing as far as standards are concerned, if those new judges are actually brought into play. And some of them do criminal, and we have more public defenders and more DAs, so I don't know. We'll have to wait for David to get back to us on this as to what we'll do next. Hans, I'm going to ask you to give David a call when you get a chance. Would you give David a Carroll call and coordinate with him as to where we go from here so he can report to us on the 30th with him on the phone, hopefully?
I will.
Thank you.
Jerry?
Yes.
One thing that I would be in favor of this commission to continue the work that we've done on caseload standards, particularly in light of the fact that if in fact there is a Nevada Right to Counsel Commission that, you know, passes through the legislature and gets signed into law, it would really help to inform any future director of that commission judgment and game plan, for lack of a better way of putting it, in terms of how to implement indigent representation strategies in rural counties that would opt in under the potential plan that the Nevada Right to Counsel Commission might propose to the legislature. I think that it's really important in the rural counties because numbers of caseloads in relation to geographical burdens that are placed on council and the courts to get the public business done and ensure that the indigent representation complies with Sixth Amendment standards would be better informed if we had, you know, we had the kind of objective analysis that this commission has done in the past, but it has sort of become, well, put on the back burner in light of some of the other important work that the commission's done with regard to the rural counties in particular, and what the court did a few years ago with regard to no more flat fee contracts. So I just, having done, and I'd be really interested to hear from the several judges that are on the phone that are in the rural counties on this particular point, because, you know, how many cases these rural lawyers have on any kind of month-to-month or year-to-year basis can really affect their ability to provide quality representation, again, when compared to or when juxtaposed with the geographic burdens that they're up against. So, well, I would be in favor of that.
One of the things we learned from David Carroll's report was that in the rural areas, we have situations where an attorney not only has private practice, but also has contracts in various counties. So I'm more interested, probably, I hate to say this, I'm more interested in where Karen is with hers, where John Asker is with his, Phil Cohn with his caseloads, to tell you the truth, than the rules at this point, John. We just have to, sometimes we have to take a back seat to the urban counties and to the state public defender's office as to what we are.
I didn't mean to suggest that the rural counties would have the back priority. I think the work that this commission has done with regard to caseload standards has been great up until the point that, you know, it kind of got put on hold. I think it should be continued because it can benefit every county in Nevada.
Well, that's why I wanted Hans to get in touch with David to see where we go from here. But when we do the reports from the various public defender's offices, I'm going to ask that question to you, Karen, and to every other public defender as to how are your caseload standards as far as your deputies are concerned, because that's my big concern. That's probably 99% of the indigent defense, the work that's done in this state. So let's go on to that. And do we have somebody from the federal public defender's office there? No.
David Anthony.
Oh, David. David, would you please, why don't you give me a report on how you guys are doing? That's what I like to hear. And also about caseload standards in the federal public defender's office.
I was just informed recently that I'd be attending here today. So my report was that everything is going well in the federal public defender's office. To answer the second question, Justice Cherry, that might depend a lot on the unit that we're talking about. I could certainly inquire. It sounds like maybe if we're comparing or making comparisons, it sounds like it might be helpful to get a report from the trial unit, since that might provide some sort of a reference for us. I could make those inquiries and then report back to the commission at our next meeting to talk about this more in detail, if that would be
great.
Helpful.
That'd be wonderful. So October 30th, we'll hear from the federal public defender. I'm going in the opposite order because Clark gets always go first. You're going to last. So Karen, let's go with you with the state public defender.
Just stop. We got to get this. Phil Cohn had comment and you missed his hand.
Well, I'm going to come back to him. Let me run this as the chairperson, please. I'll get back to everybody. I'm going to start with Karen. Karen? Give me a report on the State Public Defender's Office and your caseload standards.
Our office is good. Our caseload numbers are actually down in this last part of the year from what we had last year. And we have the same amount of attorneys, so I figure we're working well. I read David Carroll's report that indicated our caseload numbers were high in Carson, but I don't see it especially. I don't think the deputies are overwhelmed. I think the type of cases is more serious, and so the hours worked have actually gone up, but as far as strict caseload numbers, we're down. But again, I think it also depends on how you define a case. I think before we can do caseload standards, I think we have to come up with some type of uniform definition for what a case is.
But we did the dictionary. Can't
right.
you use the dictionary that we have and give me a number?
I can't, because it doesn't capture a lot of our work that we do. I think whatever we come up with is going to be imperfect, but we have like parole revocations, pardons board, justice court appeals, juvenile appeals that aren't captured in that framework. So, but our numbers, our strict numbers, the way we count cases are down, but our hours are up.
All right, Hans, you've heard what Karen has to say. So this is something that you can consult with David Carroll on as to like the state public defender, what we're going to do as far as the state public defender is concerned. Because of the number of different areas that they're involved in, as opposed to an institutional public defender's office in Clark or Washoe or Elko. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, let's go on to, that was the state public defender. How about Washoe, John or Bob or Mark? What's going on there with caseloads and also with the alternate public defender and the public defender's office and the contract attorneys, Bob? All three of you, tell me.
Well, Mark, this is John Ariscotta. Mark Sicker's not here.
Okay.
As far as our caseload numbers, Justice Cherry, as probably many of you know, I'm just starting my fourth week in the office, and so I would ask to defer on providing the caseload numbers. Candidly, I don't have them with me, and I can update that, though, at the October 30th meeting. I apologize. So that's as far as from the public defender side. Everything is going well. As with all offices, we face challenges, and we're doing our best to meet those.
Okay. How about you, Bob? How are you doing on the conflict attorneys?
Justice Cherry, we're doing good in that regard. In respect to the caseload standards, there hasn't been a real comprehensive study of our group in that regard. We've kind of kept an eye on people's caseloads, and I've become a little more concerned more recently since there's more termination of parental rights and cases in the family arena that we don't quite have enough attorneys for. So we're going to be looking at those a little harder now because of the numbers. But I would like to talk to David Carroll further about that and see how this impacts a kind of a small shop like our conflict group.
Okay. Any other comments from Washoe? Public defenders or contract attorneys? Hearing none. Chris Lally, how are you doing on the Dream Team murder project? I see there's still a murder a day in Clark County, so I know you could be gaining too much ground, but talk to us.
Well, I can only imagine what would be happening if this program had not been instituted. It would be a complete and total mess. For the last time, there's been a spike, and that trend continues. Our attorney is doing everything we can to keep the cases moving. Our attorney caseload for those handling homicide cases is astronomical. but we're doing the best we can to manage the homicides that are occurring.
I know, but it's got to be real tough on you guys, no doubt. Having done capital murder myself and homicide cases, they're not easy, that's for sure. And they have new ones day after day after day, and complicated fact situations.
The caseloads, I was just telling Jeff Wells, the caseloads for our homicide attorney are, depending on the attorney, in the neighborhood of 35 to 45 cases, which is ridiculous.
Well, it's just a symptom of what's going on in the country right now. It's just sad. Now we go to anything else for Chris as far as the project that we've developed that Justice Douglas and I allowed to be developed in Clark County. Okay, now we'll go to Phil and to Drew and to Jonelle. Let's start with Jonelle. Jonelle, what's going with my old office, the Special Public Defender? How you doing?
Well, if you just look at numbers, we're really good. Most of our attorneys are carrying around 15 to 20 cases. The problem is that too many of those are the death penalty. The state is seeking death at record numbers. We've been turning down cases because the homicide rate has gone through the roof recently, and we're doing what we can, but we are overwhelmed. We've also, for some reason, had a crazy number of large drug traffickings in the last couple of weeks. Kidnappings that are overcharged because someone moved 2 feet, and those become life sentence cases. And we've got a lot of sex assault cases going, so we're going full steam, but there's a lot.
I know it's a thankless and tough job when you're dealing with homicide case after homicide case. There's no doubt, and A and B felonies. I mean, it's tough. It's not an easy task for an attorney, a DA or a public defender or an appointed attorney.
Both of their county here, an attorney gets 2 death penalty cases, and that's it. No other cases. And we would love to be in that situation.
Yeah. We're always the oddball out when it comes to this. I hope Jeff's there, so he's listening to what's going on with the public defender's offices and the whole state. Drew, what about you? What's going on with the contract attorneys?
Our track for Justin Jennings is performing okay. We are having stress for the same homicide discussion that's taking place. With the conflicts out of the public defender's and the special public defender's office, we're having a difficult time matching our private bar with an appropriate number of homicide cases. And then you continue that discussion when they add 250 ramifications. We're also having stress in domestic violence court. We have 2 domestic violence courts dedicated down here in Clark County. And the private bar is conflict counsel in one department and full-time counsel in the other department. And the caseloads are significant there. So we continue to monitor that, watch the progression of what's going to be in the future. But just from a track point of view, both in North Las Vegas and the Las Vegas Justice Court, our track attorneys seem to be doing okay.
Have any track attorneys said, I can't, not track attorneys, anybody who's been appointed to say, I can't handle any more cases? Or anybody doing
what they... Down over the years, we've always honored that request. And so depending on the significance of what the particular issue is at the time, we would have additional track lawyers appear, give them a timeout, for lack of a better word, because there's a number of track attorneys per department, so we'll kind of monitor everybody's case a little bit, depending on the reason why their particular stress level. They will report a number of information to us. How many new cases did you get? How many cases did you resolve? How many cases you have pending? And probably one of the most important statistics I like to keep is how many felony trials you have pending at this given moment. Because that gives me an additional kind of a work product different than the actual case number discussion.
How are you handling the overflow from Jonelle's special public defender's office? How do you do that?
That's a little bit where the stress is at. We have 160 lawyers under contract. I'm guessing somewhere around 80 that we've qualified and experienced enough to handle Category 8 felonies. You reduce that subset to handle capital murder. We have 19 that we qualified to handle capital murder.
And we're stretched. I'm continually going around the board trying to find out what the latest numbers are of your pending homicide cases, in addition to everything else you have on Can You Take This Little Case?
Well, nothing does more damage to a private practice than being appointed on a murder case like I did in Douglas County for 3 weeks and being away from the office for 3 weeks. I mean, it's devastating, and that's why the caseload standards, for especially for a capital murder and for homicide, we got to be real careful with that. I don't think it's, I know that robberies are tough and burglaries are tough, kidnapping's tough, drug cases are tough, but when it comes to homicide and capital murder, my God, your standards have to be really adjusted to make it feasible to be able to handle these cases legitimately.
Justice Cherry, just so you know, that when the appointed work comes through for the private bar, it's never forced upon him. I don't have a 38, you must make, capital murder case, X. It's a discussion about, I'm somewhat familiar with their current case law. I'm familiar with some of their trial dates that are coming up.
Uh-huh.
And in their own assessment of their future work commitments, they can't make the case. I just go on to the next work.
That's good. I know you're doing a good job, Drew, and I know that Jonelle's doing a good job and Phil's doing a good job. This is thankless work. Thankless work in his defense. All right, Phil, how are you doing?
Oh, fine, thank you. what I was hoping to address before, when we were talking about the municipal court,
sure.
And was talking about case numbers and case loads, this occurred to me when we were working with the Rights of Counsel Commission, and we never fully addressed it. And I'm looking at this memorandum about Henderson and their plan. Drew just told us that he requires his lawyers to tell them how many cases he has, how many they've disclosed, and everything else. What we're not hearing from the municipal courts is how many cases every lawyer is being assigned. If there's no way in the world we can discuss what the right caseload is, we don't know what people have. I know we have discussions about deputies, but we defined the case 11 years ago. So why that's a problem. And when I look at this, I look at the Henderson memorandum, and it talks about the number of cases expected to comply. I don't want to know what's expected. I don't know how many cases in each one of these municipal courts and our courts is each lawyer getting. Well, we can do that through just court. I can tell you every lawyer what they have. But what we're not asking other people to do in the plan is for them to report how many cases they were assigned, how many cases they were resolved. And that to me is the most important thing. Because if the numbers are in the thousands, we need to know that in Las Vegas News Report or Anderson News Report or North Las Vegas or where we're talking about. I find it very troubling that we don't have numbers for anything, and that's all that I'm running up against. And I think all of these plans have to include reporting to the city manager or whatever office has it, so we know what we're talking about. And we have not addressed that. And I think before we finish this committee's work, we have to get people to report how many cases they're getting, how many COVID cases they're disposing in X number of weeks, months, or years, whatever they have. And that really concerns me.
Justice Cherry, that David Carroll's report to the Rights of Counsel Commission, and that's this part of Phil's, is that he was very clear in that report that people were using different definitions of the case. So that the ability to do a comparison was very difficult in trying to do that report. So I'm just confused about the fact we worked on that definition for hours.
So here's what it comes down to. Basically, you have different entities and different, when I say different entities, in some instances you have the courts that provide the data and the statistics. In some instances, you have a case management network that provides the data. In some instances, it's the attorney's office or the public defender's office that provides the data. We can sit down and we can write the definition, but ultimately it's the type of data that's available. So for a case management system, they can go and say, okay, the only way we can really track this data is from this measurement. Well, that measurement might be over-inclusive or under-inclusive of what our definition is. And in order to make the modifications to capture the right way, several hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it becomes economically. The other thing is, and you touched on it, is we don't have a specific order that requires courts to provide this information. So we're working around.
Maybe we can work on that. Maybe we can work on making a recommendation to the Supreme Court, because if the Right Counsel Commission gets up and running, they're going to have to have their data, because I'm worried, Murphy, in some ways Phil's talking about, I worry about the data that we have, because if it's not comparable, because if there's, then there may be some conclusions that are completely erroneous that would be drawn from that kind of data.
And we could, we have that same authority, we, for instance, in the law courts, we can go out and audit the big system for lack of better and review and make sure it's counting correct. We'll have that, because we don't have that authority, number one. But, you know, when you go to, you know, look at these definitions, what may be a case for the special public defender may be different for a public defender versus the Elko County public defender. And that's largely based upon the type of data we have to track. The definition is the definition, and that's the same we try to go for it, but it's just what data is available that we can get out.
Well, Justice Chairman, what do you think about bringing an APKG to your peers to say that all courts in the state of Nevada need to count cases in the same way, so that going forward, we can make improvements and if they're necessary, maybe they're not necessary, but we'll never know until we start counting the same way in all 17 counties.
Well, let me go back to the dictionary. Who, Franny, you and Nancy Becker did the dictionary, is that correct?
What, is that right?
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Justice Chair?
Yes.
I think I speak to this because it's basically what I was trying, the point I was trying to make earlier, and I think Franny and Phil have nailed it. And frankly, I don't think we need an ADKG, because if you go back and you look at the impaneling order for this commission itself, one of the three things that this commission was ordered to investigate and look into was caseload standards, performance standards, and the rural courts. So our charge has been to look into caseload standards, and I think we plowed some early fields on this, particularly with what Franny and Nancy Becker did, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. What needs to be done now is that we need to continue that work. And frankly, as Franny said, as I said earlier, I think it will certainly help to inform the judgment of any future Nevada's Right to Counsel Commission that's going to be a panel for the rural. What I'd be interested in hearing from, since they're on the phone and they're taking the time to participate in this meeting, are our colleagues from the rural counties, the judges that are on the telephone conference call. I'd like to hear what they may have to say, if anything, with regard to a continuation of analyzing caseload standards, not for just the urban counties, but for every county in Nevada. So we, you know, obviously it's not going to be a one rule fits everybody. Well, I don't know if any of the rural voters are still on the phone, but if they are, I'd invite them to participate with regard to their votes.
I'm just working for the 5th Judicial District, which would be Nye and Esmeralda counties. And I will tell you, I have great concerns. You know, we wear multiple hats as rural district court judges, and we're trying to provide the maximum amount of services that we can. We have 5 contract public defenders. I am the drug court judge for Cobb and Tonopah, and you know, they signed a contract that tells them they need to participate. Obviously, we have due process issues if we try to take any type of jail type of sanction against a drug court participant, and quite frankly, they don't want to participate, which, according to, you know, the standards of drug courts, is that you don't have a drug court if your public defender doesn't participate. And they say it's because of the caseload that they have, and yet, I don't know whether that is true, but one, I think it's very important that you be involved and know what's going on in the world, because they wear so many different hats. We don't have a public defender that's just criminal, juvenile, and juvenile offense is very different than adult criminal defense. They are the appointees on all our divisions of child and family service cases. And they also have to be, you know, knowledgeable about the specialty courts, the various specialty courts. And so I do think it's important, because when we look at caseloads, what are we looking at? Are we looking at just adult criminal? Are you including the juvenile? Are you including the requirements for drug court? What exactly are you including in those standards? So that's my comment.
Further comments from the rural judges that are on the phone? That's it. I wish I could say this is an easy problem, but it isn't. I can tell you, as an appellate judge, when we see the cases come up from, especially Clark County, where somebody gets convicted of, you know, 16 felonies, I don't know how you count that as one case, to tell you the truth. Yeah, I know it's one sentencing, but it's a lot of work when you have that many counts and you're fighting to get every count you can dismissed or get a not guilty verdict. So although we have the dictionary, John, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking about counting cases in the courts versus the defenders counting, and I think we run into this issue a lot. Our current uniform system of judicial record standards are set up to count cases from a court perspective, and they're not really able, I think, or in a position to count cases like you just mentioned, where it's one case but 16 felony charges. So I think courts could report how many times they appoint counsel, but beyond that, it's not really something that is sort of part of the court mindset to track, or part of the uniform system of judicial records to track. So if you want to get down to the level of 16 felony charges in one case, that has to be a defender to track it, because they're tracking their case the way they need to track it to understand their caseload, while the court is tracking those cases in the manner it needs to understand the court's caseload. And it's not necessarily realistic or that they're going to count one case the exact same way, because the data is being collected for a specific purpose. So if we tried to have a universal definition across the board, it just wouldn't work and would break all the counting systems.
What's unique is I was having breakfast with my law clerks and with two attorneys from California, two partners in a medium-sized law firm. And one of my law clerks asked, how many cases do you have? And the guy says, 4,370. I mean, it was incredible. And when I dealt with some PI firms as a special master, I also would ask, you know, how many cases do you have? Oh, we have this many. I mean, they know. But on criminal, it's very difficult. And rural is even more difficult because of private practice. When you have private practice, I was a contract attorney. I know what it's like when you got private practice and you're a contract attorney, and I was a tract attorney too. So I was in three different district courts. I had a private practice, plus I took court appointments. And to try to determine how many cases, what my caseload was daily, it changed daily, to tell you the truth. That's another thing. It changes every time you go to justice court, or you go to district court, or you have a sentencing, or you work out a plea, whatever. I don't know what to tell you. All I can say is we need David Carroll on this. This is the time we need him to give us some advice. I'm not too happy about an ADKT, because to be truthful, my colleagues really don't have an interest in this area. I love them all, but this is not their cup of tea. They're working on, they all have their own projects. They've let me have a full amount in the criminal area with this and with the Nevada Right to Counsel. And so I think that an ADK to bring it to them is not, but we can come up with something and we can make it enforceable. At least we can make it, you know, one that we suggest to rural and urban contract and institutional public defenders. How many cases do you have? And I remember being in private practice with a firm of about seven as to how many cases we had. Sometimes we knew how much we had and sometimes we didn't. You know when you have to make payroll, that's when you know what you got. And you say, get on the phone and start calling the clients. And I don't make the light of this. Hans is excellent at this. He's a brilliant, and David's brilliant at this. And whether we can come up with a solution, I don't know if we can come up with the caseload standards. We certainly came up with performance standards, and those seem to be eye-opening to those who practice criminal law. I think the practice in the state of Nevada for criminal defense attorneys, whether public defenders are retained, is very good. They do a very good job. So I think Chris Lally would agree with that. Comments, please.
Justice Chair, I think it's important to distinguish between caseload standards and caseload. Is that we don't have the ability to even start talking about caseload standards. So when we went through the Spangenberg study, there was some time study with that. The federal public defender has done massive work on caseload standards. But what Phil's talking about is not caseload standards. He's talking about simply having the ability to count the cases, and that's really detailed in the Sixth Amendment that better report to the Right to Counsel Commission. And while caseload standards is something that would be, if this legislation goes through, specifically tasked to the Right to Counsel Commission, because that's a really difficult thing to do. That requires timekeeping and case waiting and all of this stuff. That commission will not even be able to get started on that without accurate data. And I think that the court has to be involved in that, because you're talking about the ability to be able to get the data out of the ward courts. So my feeling is that take the first step first, which is to see if we can come up with, and Hans, maybe you're right, that maybe only with an order, but at least come up and to discuss the issue of how do we get your data, as is detailed in David's report from the various courts and defender offices.
Well, we're definitely going to discuss this more on October 30th, and I'm hoping Hans and David and maybe John participates in that also.
I'm setting it up with
okay,
David.
Okay, John's setting it up. He's very efficient. And I want to tell you, when I was assistant public defender, the way I knew what my deputies had as far as a caseload is when they came in and said, Mike, I'm going into private practice. And they brought in their files, and I knew exactly how many cases they had. And there was no doubt as to, I even know the status of most of them because it was in the file. But this is a tough question. I mean, we came into existence in 2008. It's 10 years later, actually 2007. It's 10 years later, and we're still talking about this. And I know that the people who did the dictionary spent a lot of time on the dictionary, and it's pretty good, to tell you the truth. I wish that we could follow the dictionary a little bit, but we need the advice from Hans, who's an expert in statistics, and John and David to give us some guidance, and we'll come up with something. We got time. And if we don't finish it, we'll turn it over to the Nevada Right to Counsel Commission. Yes?
This is Hans. I think it's important here, something that John McCormick said, to help kind of understand some of the differences between the court measurement versus a public defender measurement. For instance, a public defender may measure from the time of the 72-hour hearing. The court doesn't count a case in the USJR standards until that complaint or citation is received. They still record that they have a 72-hour hearing. They're not going to count that as a case. Similarly, we don't capture what type of case it is after an amended complaint is filed. We don't capture what the amended charges go to, where that might be important from a public defender standpoint. So, but some of those nuances and some of those things that are there really are going to help follow what the court's caseload is, not necessarily what public defender's caseload is. So I think it's important that while we go down the standards road, that we look at those differences. It's not, the court is not necessarily going to be the best person to get that information.
No, I agree with that.
Any further comments on this? We'll again be talking about this on October 30th for sure, when David's back on the phone and John has had to set up his meeting. Anything else? Is Amy there? Is Amy Rose there?
Amy was not able to come today, Jim.
Franny, you got a report for us on that as to the status of the litigations?
Quick read, often still pending. We're in the middle of a class certification discovery.
Any further?
I forgot how deadly civil discovery is.
Welcome back to the arena. Is there any public comment from anybody? Any public comments? Seeing none. Is there any new business of any type? Anybody want to bring up anything? I want to thank everybody for participating. It's a relatively sharp meeting. We'll do a little more on October 30th when we have some time to get some reports, and we need David on the phone on this. He's been a great consultant, and he's got loads of knowledge on how to do this caseload, whether you count caseloads or caseload standards, one or the other. Thank you, everybody, and we're in adjournment. Everybody, have a nice week. Rachel, thank you for participating.